This episode of the Memory Palace is brought to you by Progressive, home of the Name Your Price tool. You say how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. It's easy to start a quote. Visit Progressive.com to get started. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Support for the Memory Palace comes from Odoo. What is Odoo? Well, Odoo is the only software your business will ever need. Featuring a suite of integrated business applications, Odoo connects your business operations together so you can get more done in less time. Odoo has apps for everything: CRM, accounting, sales, HR, inventory, marketing, manufacturing, you name it. Odoo's got it. To learn more, visit odoo.com/memory. That's odoo.com/memory.
This is the Memory Palace. I'm Nate DeMeo. Some words written at the end of 2021 after realizing that with all the losses we've experienced in the last couple of years, I'd somehow missed, or honestly maybe even had seen and then just forgotten, that the drummer Jimmy Cobb died of lung cancer at the age of 91 in May of 2020. He heard music all the time as a kid, but he didn't listen. Not really. It was everywhere in his Washington neighborhood in the 1930s, where he'd roam free, more or less. His dad was out of the picture. His mom was always at work, cleaning other people's houses. He'd hear the hit parade on the radio, hear the church music spilling out onto the street on a Sunday, the grown-ups playing their grown-up music, the blues coming out of open windows on summer nights. But nothing found its way into him until he was 13, which is when it seems to happen, doesn't it? He turned 13 and he found his couple of friends, and they found their music. His buddy Walter down the street. This kid Pinkerton, they called him PJ, lived around the block. They were the only people they knew who liked jazz, and they would sit around and listen to records. Jimmy tapping out a rhythm with his knuckles on the side of the coffee table. And then after his mom went to bed, he would turn on the radio. There was a New York station, you could get it all the way down in DC. And a DJ called Symphony Sid would spin records all night long. Jimmy wouldn't fall asleep until Sid signed off at 6 a.m. An hour later, his mother would wake him up for school, and to say goodbye on her way to work, Jimmy would just go back to bed, until right before his mom would come back home, just in time to make up a story about what he did at school that day. But before long, he had reason to get up in the morning. He went to a vocational high school across the street from the college prep one, and while his friends learned their trades in the wood shop, in the metal shop, in the garage, he learned his in band. He would say, decades later, that he had one goal when he started playing the drums. He wanted to be adequate. He wanted to be adequate so he could make a living in the business. So he put in the work, learned how to hold his sticks, how to set up his kit, make it his own, how tight he liked his snare, the angle of the tom, how much space he liked between his hi-hats, learning all the different sounds he could pull out of his ride cymbal, how to get it ringing or shimmering, or just tap, 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 tapping out time. For Jimmy Cobb, timing really did turn out to be everything. He just had it. There were other drummers with more flair. Gene Krupa, Buddy Rich, Max Roach. Guys whose fills would dazzle and disrupt and dismantle the rhythm between bars. Turn the beat around, as the song goes. Turn time on its head. Not Jimmy. He was the steady pulse. The rolling groove. The shushing brushes, the tiny echoes coming off his pinging ride cymbal like desert heat off a highway. That was Jimmy Cobb. He didn't just keep time, some human metronome keeping the players in line. He made time swing. And that is what time does, in my experience. It doesn't just tick by. Miles Davis, when he went into the studio to record what would turn out to be the best-selling jazz album in history, told Jimmy he just wanted him to do what he does. Just make it sound like it's floating. Time floats. Jimmy Cobb made his living playing the drums for about 70 years, proving himself adequate. And his term, though preposterous, is fitting in a way, because it was his penchant for understatement that helped his career take off. He found his niche early on, backing up singers in Dinah Washington's band, Sarah Vaughan's, sitting back, serving the song, keeping time, making it swing, and building one of the most storied careers in jazz through some strange alchemy that turned understatement into magic. turned time into a floating thing. He spent his life gig to gig, band to band, session to session. One night he is in New York, another in Kansas City, another in Copenhagen, Tokyo, Montreal. He's walking down the street in Vegas and Sammy Davis calls out his name, and next thing he knows, the two of them are golfing with Jackie Gleason. He is zipping Billie Holiday into her dress backstage. He is tying off a friend's arm while the man shoots heroin. He is swearing right then and there that he will never go down that road. He is holding to it. He's getting married for the third time. He's having a daughter and another one. They will bury him at 91. He's playing 8 hours a night for years. Smoky rooms at Lincoln Center, European palaces. He's playing with the Adderley Brothers, with Coltrane, with Bill Evans, with Red Garland, with every shining name, just about. And so many names that are fading. So many others that never found the light, and are just gone now. There were nights when everything would come together, when the band would find something in their improvisation, something transcendent, for a few bars, a few moments, whole minutes, a whole set, that left him vibrating, left everyone in that club, in that hall, with the sensation that they had really heard something, something real and alive as time swung around them. And other nights when it wouldn't come, when they chased that feeling and it would just slip away. There's a story that goes that Art Blakey, one of Jimmy Cobb's heroes, truly one of the greats, went to Africa in the late 1950s. And while he was there, he noticed that so many of the percussion instruments had multiple ways to make sounds. A gourd or a drum that you would strike with a stick might also have a string of beads or shells attached that would rattle or shake. So when he got back to the States, he drilled holes in his ride cymbal and hammered in nails that would do the same thing. It created this rattling sound that would reverberate long after you struck it. And every drummer wanted to sound like Art Blakey, so people started doing the same thing, and before long, all the big manufacturers were making cymbals with rivets built in. Call them sizzle rides. Jimmy Cobb had one in his kit when he went to the Columbia Studios on 30th Street in Manhattan in the spring of 1959 for the recording sessions that would become the record Kinda Blue. This is when Miles told him to just make it sound like it's floating. It has sold millions of copies. Maybe you own one. If not, you've likely heard it. Maybe recognize it from this. When Paul Chambers brings in the hook on the bass. And there's a sound you're going to hear in a second that I love. And there is nothing remarkable in my love for it. Kinda Blue is the biggest jazz record of all time, and so this is like me saying I think Monet's Water Lilies are pretty. But there's this moment that I love so much, and when he was recording, Jimmy Cobb was sure he'd screwed up. He hadn't played around much with this new kind of ride cymbal before he went into the studio, and so he really kind of leans into it when the band comes to the change, and he was sure he'd hit it too hard. But over and over, for the rest of his life, people would come up to him and tell him no. It was perfect. He just hits the ride. And it feels like the sound will go on forever. May it go on forever. This episode of The Memory Palace was written and produced by me, Nate DeMeo, in December of 2021. This show gets research assistance from Eliza McGraw. It is a proud member of Radiotopia, a network of listener-supported, independently owned and operated podcasts from PRX, a not-for-profit public media company. It is an arrangement that allows each of us, as owners and individual creators, to come up with our own definitions of adequate and find our own rhythms. If you ever want to drop me a line, you can reach me at nate@thememorypalace.us. You can follow me on Twitter or Facebook at The Memory Palace. And if you are doing your year-end charitable donations and you want to directly support the work that I do here and support independent media, you can make a tax-deductible donation at radiotopia.fm. As always, thank you so much for taking the time out to listen, and I will talk to you again.
Radiotopia.